Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel.
A coat, again, call it coat of many colors. It's translated variously in the Hebrew, but that idea. So here you have Joseph walking around with this really neat jacket. I mean an expensive jacket, reminding his brothers endlessly that I'm the favored one. And on top of that, because there was a sense for a higher purpose that he was favored, he has these prophetic dreams, you recall, right? And these prophetic dreams are all about the whole family bowing down to him. In other words, he having this ultimate preeminence in the family. And Joseph, a skinny 17-year-old kid who didn't know any better, he would talk about this. I mean, it's one thing to have the dream. It's another thing to emphasize it, talk about it endlessly. And so you had the coat, and you had these pronouncements, these dreams. And the brothers, and this is a sad thing, they hated him. So in the story of Joseph, we read that he was sent by his father to check up on them. Oh, that's great, to check up on them. And the brothers see him coming from a distance, and they say to one another, here comes the dreamer. Let's get rid of him. This is pretty raw stuff. You know, the Bible is not a sanitized book. It's got a lot of tough stuff in it. But it's tough because it's helpful to us. So he comes, and the story is that they intend to kill him. But what we learn from the text is that there is one brother who doesn't want to kill him. And he wants to return him to his father. And so he says, look, let's not kill him. Let's just throw him in a hole, in a pit. His intention was to come back and rescue him. So I want to talk a little bit about this brother. This brother is Reuben. And Reuben is the firstborn of the family. But his story is not what you might expect as the firstborn being the preeminent, because there was a sense of a double portion given to the eldest son. That son had the responsibility for mom and dad in their old age. He received a double portion. But he was favored. There was just a general trajectory in that way. But this son really grew up in a way that he really meant well, but it never really worked out for him, even though he was the eldest. Of course, in the family, we have already the emphasis on Joseph, as I've pointed out. But you have this son, and there's a story where, and this gets complicated too, but back then they had multiple wives. And really, in the Jewish community, that continued for several centuries, and even after Yeshua, it was a very common practice in the world to have multiple wives, and there were economic and other reasons for that. But it was, from a relationship standpoint, a horrible arrangement. Why? Because of jealousy. And that's what happened among the wives and concubines of Jacob. And so he favored Rachel, but Reuben came from Leah. Now you recall that Leah was not a favored wife. It's another whole story. If you don't know it, I'll tell it to you another time. But there was a rivalry between the two. And there you have Reuben, who wants to do something right for his mom, and he brings her some mandrakes. Now, mandrakes back in those days was considered both an aphrodisiac and also a birth enhancer or a pregnancy enhancer. And so he sees that his mother is not favored, and he goes, Mom, look, I found these, and you know, maybe these can be helpful with your relationship with Dad. But what happens? It doesn't work out, and the mandrake incident becomes a source of tremendous antagonism between Rachel and Leah. And so he tries, but it doesn't go well at all, this issue of the mandrakes. And so we have this kid, this eldest son, who is not the favored one, who has this pattern of giving it his best shot, in a sense, but it doesn't work out well at all. So He then says to his brothers, let's not kill him, but let's throw him in a pit. And I want to point out just an interesting feature of the Hebrew here that helps illuminate the world of Reuben and gives us some insight that I think will be helpful to all of you. So hang in there with me a little bit. I'm reading Genesis 37:21. When Reuben heard this, that is, that his brothers wanted to kill the youngest boy, when Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. Let's not take his life, he said. But what's interesting is that the Hebrew doesn't say that he tried to rescue him. I'll give it to you. It's not complicated. Hebrew, Vayishma Reuven, when Reuben heard, and Vayatzlehu, Vayadam, Miyadam, and he rescued him from their hand. It doesn't say he tried to rescue him. It says he rescued him. But that isn't what happened. He didn't get rescued. He wasn't rescued. And we know that the story of Joseph continues with his being sent to Egypt and the account with Potiphar's wife and all that occurs. So what the Torah states is what might have been, but not what actually occurred. Let me just say parenthetically, there's also an unusual thing about this verse in that very rarely in the Torah does the inner thoughts of a person come up. The Torah deals with things in a very matter-of-fact, external kind of way. The inner motivations of a person are very, very rarely discussed in the Torah. It's a very rare example of explaining the thoughts of a person that Reuben explains that what he was trying to do was rescue his brother. But the reality is he didn't rescue his brother. And the Hebrew says he did. So how do we reconcile that? And so there's an interesting midrash. Now, some of you are new to the synagogue here, so you might not know what this word midrash means. Don't get hung up on it. All it means is a little story, a reflection by later rabbis on what this passage might have meant. That's it. That's it. A midrash, it's kind of an ad, or to put it in musical terms, it's an ad lib solo based on the text, which seeks to explain something that otherwise is difficult to understand. So that's what a midrash is. And the midrash goes this way. If Reuben had only known that the Holy One, blessed be He, would write of him, that is, the Torah would write of Reuben, and Reuben heard and saved him from their hands, he would have picked Joseph up on his shoulders and carried him back to his father. If he knew, of course he didn't know how this whole story was going to unfold, but had he known that it was God's intention to do these, to rescue Joseph, he would have picked Joseph up and put him on his shoulders right then and there. He would have said to his brothers, nothing doing, we're not hurting him, I'm taking him home. But he didn't do that. You see, as with the case of the mandrakes, he had good intentions, but his intentions did not work themselves out. He didn't know that it was God's intention to rescue his brother, ultimately. And so we have this interesting guy who grows up in a house knowing that his own mother was not favored by her husband, trying to compensate for that a bit by bringing the mandrakes, and yet that resulted in a huge family fight. He tries, it doesn't work out. He tries to rescue, or wants to rescue, Joseph, but it doesn't work out. And so it says in verse 29, when Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. That's a picture of mourning, you know. That's a picture of desperation. He tears his clothes. He went back to his brothers and said, the boy isn't there. Where can I turn now? And the story continues that they pretend that Joseph is dead, and he goes along with it. Now, what do we make of all of this? Well, there's a few lessons that arrive from this, because I have a sympathetic attitude toward him, and I think we should. His intentions were good, but he didn't have the courage at one point to actualize them. He didn't know what God was intending to do. earlier in life, he fouled things up between the relationship of his mother and her rival, that is, Rachel. We're sympathetic to him because we realize that in life, it's a nice idea to be a hero all the time, but in a very real sense, our power is somewhat limited. Our understanding, our wisdom, our power to actualize all that we want to do. And at times in life, if we're honest, we may feel, you know, I really haven't ended up on top in this particular situation. I'm struggling. Like him, at times you can feel a little bit second rate. He intended to rescue his brother, but it didn't work out. Sounds a little like us, noble intentions. But shaping influences from our own families can get in the way. Miscalculations of effort despite our best attention. But here's the point that I want to make. And I have nothing even specific in mind. I mean, I think it's just the way it is. And I think sometimes in religious circles, we can paint a picture that's so filled with success and everything's going to go great that you'll have no regrets and no things that you wish had turned out differently and no ways in which you look at yourself and wish you had the strength, the smarts, the whatever, to be able to accomplish what you intended to accomplish. And I think that to some extent, it's good to have a can-do attitude and to live with a sense of, wow, you know, I've really moved ahead and I've accomplished some things. But life is complicated. Life is not just one-dimensional. Life is not always success. Sometimes there are things that we wish were otherwise. But you see, here's the good news. God gets all that. And he is bigger than our inadequacies, whether self-imposed or just circumstantial or, again, a function of the patterning that we may have received early on. And so we love Psalm 27:10. You're familiar with this passage because we read it at holiday time or prior to the high holidays. Psalm 27:10, though my father and mother forsake me, the Lord will receive me. That is, though things don't go exactly as I would have liked, though I've received patterns that I wish I didn't have, though they have even forsaken me and left me quite vulnerable, God's love is bigger than all that. And we're reminded of Yeshua's words too. Come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly of heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Now, this is an incredible passage because packed all around this passage are expressions of his grandeur, his power over the demonic realm that we read this morning. And that's real stuff, by the way. Okay? We read his pronouncements about his own being the Messiah of Israel and saying to Israel, listen, until you're ready to come to me, things are not going to work out great. I mean, these are amazing expressions of grandeur and a kind of superiority that's well-deserved given who he was. And yet in the midst of it, he says of himself, look, come to me if you, like Reuben, live with a sense of, it hasn't turned out as I would hoped. Come unto me, all of you who labor and are heavy laden, I'm going to give you rest. And that is an expression of grandeur. I will give you rest. Not I'm going to teach you how you can find it like at a self-help seminar. I will give you rest. But then he speaks of himself as meek and lowly of heart. That is the amazing contrast that we find in this passage. So you have in Psalm 27, God says, you know, King David says, when even my parents have forsaken me, God will take me up. And in this passage, Yeshua says, listen, I get it. I get it. I'm with you through the victories. I'm with you through the things that you wish were different, but you don't have either the wisdom or the strength or whatever it takes to make it different. You're just a product. You're not all powerful. I'm with you through it all. And so what we're left with as we think about Reuben, we think about the God who made the universe and who's so powerful and so terrific, and yet the God who cares so much that he gets it about the human condition. And that's a kind of God we can worship. And that's one we can become vulnerable before. And that's one we can just find joy on this Shabbat morning. And I say to you, Shabbat Shalom.
Please, O Lord, our God, may the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, may the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel. And may your descendants and the descendants of your people Israel be those. Know your name and study your Torah for Messiah's sake.